All right, everybody. This is your hosts, Miles Lewis and Mac White, live in Austin, Texas, with a brand new live web radio show here on the Anomaly Radio Network. Thank you for tuning in. Mac, are you with us?
I am here, and hey, it's going to be a great show. Number one show in the series.
We haven't unveiled the name yet. Coming soon enough. Tonight we're going to talk about the kind of things you'll be hearing on this show in the future. As far as the time slot, right now we're hijacking Mac White's live show from 7 to 8 p.m. Tuesday nights here on AnomalyRadio.com, but this may or may not be the recurring time slot for that show. We may, in fact, not be doing this every week. Right now it's just a spontaneous show that we decided to do just on the spur of the moment, pretty much. Well, Mac, you've been my friend here in the old Lone Star State for going on
several years now.
Seven or pre 2K.
Pre-Y2K, yes.
And we met through, we met thanks to a friend of mine who founded the Austin UFO Abductee Support Group years ago at the height of the alien abduction craze. And she pointed me to your website once saying, friend of yours, question mark? And that's led to this wonderful friendship. I had actually seen your work in so much as your artistic expression. For those that don't know, Mac White is an accomplished graphic artist, a comic artist, and he's definitely not unknown in the comics industry, and has been publishing for years now. And his last several projects have included compilations that he's done with some other famous comic artists, one of which he was the assistant editor for, the Bush Junta?
The Bush Junta, yes, that came out a couple of years ago. That was the anthology that I co-edited with Gary Groff. It was a Fantagraphics publication, and it told in comic book format the entire history of the Bush crime family up to that point. We could do a sequel now.
There's definitely been enough crimes at the hands of the Bush administration to write a
yes.
sequel. And
we're still under this Bush regime here three years since the book came out. And we don't know when we're going to have a regime change here.
Well, hopefully we don't experience what the most paranoid conspiracy theorists have suggested, which is that there'll be a third regime, either due to some, you know, October surprise, no more elections, tyranny, martial law. There was a terrorist attack, and we had to suspend the elections. There's always been a threat of that, I think, in the conspiratorially minded patriot community here in the United States. Rightfully so. It seems, given the crimes of these mafia families, so to speak, they definitely seem capable and willing to maybe do this. Though at the same time, there does seem to be something at work to pull them back, but and to as some would say, bring in the left hand or left foot of fascism with the right foot, left foot of the two-party system.
Yeah, that's the thing. That we don't know how much that we're experiencing here, the criminality and the disenchantment that so many people are now finally beginning to experience with regards to their perception of the Bush regime, how much of that wasn't programmed all along, that perhaps this was all set up in order to destroy our faith in the American system and of government and so forth, and to bring about something that at first might seem to be a benevolent rescue from this Fourth Reich, but in fact might be worse, a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Both in the form of a leftist, liberal new presidential regime, or,
right.
as some have suspected, a sort of the possibility that the United Nations could swoop in to save America from itself.
That's the thing, is that this would conceivably work so perfectly as a scenario for the globalist acting as the United Nations to come in and save us. you know, we now know that Hitler and the Third Reich were set up by the same people who were setting up this UN after the war. And the whole thing was to demonstrate to the world that we needed to have a United Nations, the foundation at least of a one-world government to save us from potential future Hitlers. And it just looks like that could be the sort of thing that might be going on now.
Well, even just the most non-conspiratorial leftists have to default back to the, oh, government's just incompetent, that's why there can't be these big conspiracy theories that are so complex, and they just time and time again go back to this incompetency coincidence theory idea that, you know, all these things unfold the way they do by chance and coincidence. And while I would be the first to say, you know, yes, that in some ways there may be that aspect here, but and incompetence in human affairs is not unknown in human history, but just at even just a base level, the level of corruption you see on the small scale with the beat cops, you know, I mean, we can get into this later talking about the recent Montana situation, which at first blanch seems to just probably be, you know, some low level, you know, government agents out to graft, you know, but talking about this global conspiracy. I keep flashing back to the first artistic work of yours that I remember seeing, and that was the thing you did for the local newspaper, Stigmata Sunrise?
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, that's right. Stigmata Sunrise, unbelievably, as subversive as that was, originally appeared as a weekly serial in the local daily newspaper here in Austin.
But that was the daily of the Austin Un-American Statesman, correct?
That's right.
Well, some of the ideas in there. One of the things one of the things I love about you, Mac, is we share so many areas of interest that range from just this whole hardcore parapolitical arena to the parapsychological, the Gnostic, the mystical, consciousness, dreams. I mean, you've experienced things like prophetic dreams. You've experienced, you know, you lived through the JFK assassination. You're familiar with writers like Robert Anton Wilson, who just shed his mortal coil.
Philip K. Dick.
and the Stigmata Sunrise really actually strikes me as a very similar to the whole Illuminatus trilogy idea of there's this vast, you know, mysterious conspiracy going on with flying saucers, psychedelic drugs, mind control conspiracies, a la CIA, MK Ultra. And rock and roll, you know, to boot, also this appreciation of mysticism and Gnostic perspectives, like you mentioned, Philip K. Dick being one of the probably
yeah,
the
and
biggest.
There's this feeling of mine. We talk about conspiracies and how there's this perhaps ancient plot that's been at work now for a long time to establish this one world police state. And thinking about that and thinking about the magnitude of that conspiracy, as imperfect as it might be at times, because they do make mistakes, and it can seem very daunting. But I do believe that there's a higher power at work.
It's the pronoic conspiracy, that there are forces that are working on our behalf.
That are working on our behalf, yes. And I guess you can call that whatever you want. You can call it God, or you can call it the union compensating factor. but there's something else at work. And we can see this, and whenever we have experiences like precognitive dreams, so many people have these experiences. I think you have as well. Dreams that seem to be more than just some random activity of the brain while we're in REM sleep, but actually seem to speak to us of ultimate reality, in which we can experience reality outside of time. But we can see it at work all the time. You know, people do try to debunk conspiracy theory as a whole by saying, well, if for a conspiracy such as JFK or 9/11 to work, somebody would have talked. You'd have to have so many people involved, and it wouldn't be able to hold together because somebody would have talked. There would have been some weak link in the chain. Well, you know, there is always a numerous weak links in those chains, and people do talk. And the debunkers who say that are very often members of the mainstream media, and the reason why it's not generally known that people have talked who were involved in the JFK or whistleblowers now who have some inside knowledge about 9/11 and they're talking, they are talking, but the mainstream media isn't reporting it.
Yeah.
And so there's that going on. There's just the, you know, it's true that there is no perfect conspiracy. But there's also the other thing working against the conspirators is that higher power I was talking about.
Yeah, we'll call it God, Jah, or as Philip K. Dick alluded to, Valis, Vasta, active living
yes.
intelligence system. And John C. Lilly, who also thought he was in communication with some kind of weird hive mind, called it ECHO, E-C-C-O, or Earth Coincidence Control Office.
There's a conspiracy theory, or so-called. It really isn't theory, I don't think. A lot of times it's conspiracy fact. But conspiracy theory, coincidence theory, which is what the mainstream media and the Warren Commission apologist and those types, that's what they peddle. My gosh, the probability of so many conspiracies, coincidences happening is absurd. But I think, though, there is also a meaningful coincidence at work, by which I mean synchronicity. Or you mentioned John Lennon, John Lilly. He referred to something like, wasn't it Cosmic Coincidence Control?
ECHO, Earth
yes.
Coincidence Control
right.
Office.
So there's synchronicity, and I see synchronicity happening all the time in my life.
Well, I certainly have experienced my share of synchronicity, and that's been my approach to conspiracy theory and parapolitics. I think that there are various levels, hierarchies of consciousness and intelligence, just like there are hierarchies of intelligence agencies among humans.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's good evidence that mind does interact with matter in ways that are predictable scientifically, but also mostly unknown by the populace and by science in general. And so, but getting out of the parapsychological realm and just into the kind of social psychological realm, I think it can't be denied that when you've got a Clinton and a Bush, and they go to more or less the same kind of Ivy League schools, and they go
mm-hmm.
to the same kinds of fraternities, and practice the same kinds of ritual initiation, and partake of the same good old boy networks.
Yeah,
there's necessarily a group mind mm-hmm. going on there. That they're participating in a group consciousness. When they all serve on the Council on Foreign Relations, they're doing so as part. They're taking part in an organism.
Yeah, you know, anyone who thinks that Hillary Clinton would represent any kind of an alternative to the regime that we've experienced for the past several years since Bush Jr. took office doesn't know what's happening, hasn't been paying attention, didn't pay attention during the first Clinton administration. And for that matter, I got to say, you know, a lot of people are putting, you know, they are disenchanted with Hillary Clinton, but I believe that they're putting a little too much faith in this Obama fellow.
Yeah.
You know, because, again, we're not going to see any real change or potential for change coming from anyone any candidate who doesn't. I mean, yeah, it's one thing to oppose the war. That's a good sign, yes. But you've also got to oppose the very basic principle behind this scam of the war on terror. And beyond, you know, there's very few members of Congress or candidates from the two major parties who are, you know, seem to have any integrity or who offer any kind of hope for an alternative.
There's only one I can think of.
One would have been Cynthia McKinney, who's no longer in Congress, but the other would be Ron Paul, who's running for president and hasn't got as much attention from the mainstream media as he should.
Yeah, he's the person that jumps to my mind, and of course I'm sure there's plenty of liberals who immediately go, oh, he's done some good things, but he's a little weird, and he is a Republican, but you know, it's like, no, he's a libertarian. He's been speaking out against all these issues from the Federal Reserve to the war on terror and the war in Iraq, and you know, just generally has a parapolitical perspective on things.
Yeah, he's the only one, really.
Yeah.
I don't really have any illusions that he's going to win.
No, but apparently he's going to be in the debate.
If he's able to at least put these issues out there and have them heard more than they've been so far, as you mentioned, the Federal Reserve and so forth, then that's something.
And he's made it into the debates, apparently.
Yeah,
the first
that
round.
Was really encouraging. Yeah, that'll be interesting.
So, Mac, you've got a blog that people can get to by going to your main website, macwhite.com, and you've been doing your weekly or semi-weekly podcast for quite some time now, experimenting with pre-recorded shows and hooking your brain up to record your dreams and
yeah.
similar strange experiments. What have you been blogging about recently? Of course, I know the answer to this, and I'll say Montana.
Yes. Well, yes, Montana. For anyone listening who doesn't know what we mean, well, just go to my blog and you'll find out. Last week, I was on Jack Blood's show on the Genesis Communications Network, Deadline Live, and discussing something I had blogged about, which is that this fellow that I made friends with via email, Cowboy Ron is his name. He's an antique dealer in Montana, runs an antique shop that specializes in Old West collectibles called Cowboy Cabin. Well, to summarize the story, he was raided by government agents, and it turns out they were ATF agents who were enforcing Montana's gambling regulations. I don't know how that works exactly. They came into his antique store and confiscated these gambling devices that were, some of them, over 100 years old, roulette wheel table, punch boards, and dice cages, and so forth, and confiscated them because they were unlicensed gambling devices, when in fact these are antiques that were being sold not for gambling purposes but for home decor or for historical collections. And in fact, one of the items was a roulette wheel and table that had been used for 20 years on the classic television series Gunsmoke.
Wow.
And was worth over $18,000. The value of the entire collection that was confiscated, I say stolen, was over $77,000. And they just, and you know, under Montana law, well, a gambling device can be sold legally as long as it's been rendered inoperable. And these items were, for all practical purposes, inoperable because they were so old and fragile that you wouldn't want to use them for anything except to look at. And this was something that was clearly outside the intent of the law as it was written. These agents come in there and confiscate them. And their attitude, as it was described to me in a conversation I had with Cowboy Ron's son-in-law, was thuggish. One of the agents picked up one of the items, and it was a dice cage, and said, "This will look good on my desk," which raised the question, what are they going to do with these things? And Cowboy Ron asked them as they were carting all these things out the door, what they're going to do with them. They said, they're going to be destroyed. Well, ridiculous. This thing hit the local media in Montana. Cowboy Ron went to the newspapers, and it turns out that his son-in-law has been a photojournalist, has worked with Associated Press and so forth. So they made a mistake there because he had some kind of connection with the mainstream media. At least there in Montana, they've got coverage. It didn't get a lot of coverage outside of Montana until I went on Jack Blood's show and we talked about it, and it was heard internationally. And after the show, Cowboy Ron's son-in-law emailed me and said they had received something like 2,000 emails from all over the place in support of them.
Well, one of the things that you mentioned in your last update on the Cowboy Ron situation that really just, so many of these things tickle me. I mean, there's more to the story, and I don't want to jump the gun, but you mentioned the show being heard around the world, and you mentioned, I think you started to allude to the fact that the show, GCN, the Genesis Communications Network that Jack Blood's show is on, is heard in Montana on one of the oldest independently
That's right.
owned radio station in the U.S., KEGZ AM.
Yes.
Well, and that, to me, that's so symbolic. If here we've got an issue of antiques, and I blogged about this on anomalytv.com just because I was trying to get the word out, and the headline I put was "The War on Antique Technology."
Mm-hmm.
So hey, we got a war on terror. Why not antique technology? But that just tickles me to think that this old, oldest independently operated radio station, it picked up the story, got people's ire up. And of course,
uh-huh.
as you point out, and in your first blog, you posted about there was significant local news coverage because, Ron
yeah.
didn't shut up.
Yeah, they covered it there locally, and as a result of that, these ATF agents came back to the cowboy cabin the day after this hit the local news media, and tried to intimidate Cowboy Ron and say, "You stop talking to the media. You keep doing that, we're going to turn up the heat." Well, the heat was being turned up on them. And, result of this has been, as a result of the media that it got, the coverage that it got there locally, and then the coverage that it got internationally on GCN, is that the Montana State Legislature is quickly writing a bill that would exempt antiques and toys
Woo-hoo!
From confiscation as gambling devices.
That's
and
awesome.
And it's going to be retroactive so that Cowboy Ron will get his merchandise back, and it's on the fast track for passage.
Well, that better go through. Otherwise, they'll hear more from people.
Oh, boy.
People around
but it just
the
goes to show you that this would not have happened if he had not made this public, and if he had allowed himself to be intimidated by these thugs that came back the next day. And it shows you what can be accomplished. Those thugs were scared. that they want to be able to do these things in secret. But the more that we make their crimes public, and put information out in the public eye that they don't want out there, the more difficult it is for them. And we can make a difference.
Well, and this is technology's double-edged sword aspect. He apparently tried to take pictures of them when they came back.
Oh, yeah, that was the other thing. But they, when they came back, he had a camera there, and he took their picture. And they demanded that he delete the picture, And that's unfortunate. He said that if they were concerned that he would post their picture on the internet, I wish that he had that they had not managed to intimidate him into doing that. I think these people that do this sort of thing should have their pictures posted on the internet.
Yeah.
Because they're criminals.
Well, you know, you posted part of Alex's talk show where he talked about this case and his approach and others, and of course he called into your show, the show with you and Jack Blood, and he make again this double-edged sword of technology. I mean, I'm all against the surveillance society that's growing up and encroaching on our liberties all around us, whether it be RFIDs, you know, toll road transponders, you know, all of these things to mm-hmm. track and control and tax everybody to death and enslave them and as Alex says, the prison planet. But, you know, at the same time, you know, these technologies can be used to our benefit. We can use these surveillance cameras to monitor them. I mean, when I posted it to Anomaly TV, I was just thinking, my gosh, if only one of those local stations had done a video news story, and if they did, if it was on the web, mm-hmm. I mean, can you imagine the response that would have happened and could still happen?
We've seen this happen more and more recently as the cell phone video cameras have become more prominent. There was that case a few months back where a college student at UCLA was tasered by the campus cops in the school library, and this was seen by no telling how many millions of people worldwide on the internet, this video. And well, it just goes to show you that Big Brother technology can be used to watch Big Brother. It works both ways.
I completely agree.
So you know, buy a disposable camera, get a cell phone video camera if you can, install surveillance devices in your home so that if the cops are in your car, or in your store, so that if the cops, come in and try to do anything illegal, they'll be the ones in trouble.
Well, this is what I'm getting at. This does give me a little bit of concern. I don't like the idea of being monitored all the time.
No.
And, you know, it's okay. Even more, there's just so many news stories about this, about the NSA and AT&T all, you know, reading our emails. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the NSA has been listening to conversations for decades and listening for keywords and that sort of thing. But, yeah, I mean, that's what it's going to take. I know a certain other Austinite who, like several people have done, it had installed in their car surveillance cameras so that if they got pulled over by the police, they could record so that they'd have a record of how they acted and it would be their mm-hmm. word against. And, of course, now, you know, in some ways, thankfully, the cops, you know, they have those cameras in their cars. Now, there are those instances where those tapes go missing or mysteriously get parts of them deleted and...
Yeah, that was the case where they killed this young man in South Austin a while back, and oh, you know, wouldn't you know it? For some reason, the cop car camera was turned off. You know the case I'm talking about?
It rings a bell.
Yeah, the female cop went out there that they were gonna you know, kick around this young kid that they'd. He had a record, but he, you know, basically all he had done, that they had seen him sitting in a car smoking some marijuana, so they chase him down, and in the struggle, her taser fell off, she said,
and he supposedly reached for it.
Yeah, and she thought, oh my God, he's going to use it on me, so she pulls out her gun and shoots him dead.
Shoots him in the back.
What's that?
Shoots him in the back.
Yeah, it was terrible, it should have been caught on camera. But the car camera had been turned off for some reason.
You know, Austin's got, I mean, I know every big city's got these stories, but, I mean, Austin's got its share, I mean, of SWAT teams shooting the wrong person, or, well, shooting anybody, you know, that they don't need to, bursting into a home in the middle of the night or the morning, and, you know, somebody's crashed out on the couch that they don't expect to be there, and that person startles awake, and there they go, they're dead.
Yeah.
You know? The incident where it was caught on video or tape where the local police were basically text messaging each other in their squad cars during an East Austin fire. And, of course, East Austin is typically a minority community. And
they're making all those racist comments. Well, it is a nationwide problem. Austin seems to be worse than a lot of them. So it's certainly worse than it used to be. But it's a nationwide problem. Remember the story that came out a few months ago in Atlanta where the Atlanta police kicked in the door of a 90-year-old woman who she didn't know what they were doing. These are plainclothes officers, and now they can conduct these no-knock searches and just kick in the door in the middle of the night, and she's living in a high-crime neighborhood, and
right.
She's got a gun to protect herself with, and it's, 3 in the morning, and she fires at the gun and manages to wound two of them, doesn't kill them, because then they open fire on her and kill her. Oh, sorry, but they had the wrong house. Ridiculous. That sort of thing goes on all the time.
Yeah, there's a really good book out there, and I unfortunately can't remember the title, but it's all about the militarization of law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
It may even be the Cato Institute or one of those institutes that put it out, but it talks about the huge rise in the use of military armament and technology by the police and the huge rise in SWAT-type operations and special ops and anti-drug task force across the country and how they're being taught in military tactics and what's happening in the wake of this increase in militarized police is of course a huge rise in accidental deaths both of suspects, unintended victims, people who were the wrong address or rather who were at the wrong place at the wrong time because the SWAT team got the wrong address. I mean, just time and time again, they had an interactive map on the website for this book where you could click on any state or any type of whether it was an accidental death or death
I've
of one of their own
map.
Officers.
And it also shows you that a lot of cops are getting killed due to these tactics unnecessarily, and because they're also, because the Supreme Court ruled that no-knock raids were okay. Well, that has been a fundamental part of common law for many centuries and for a practical reason, because people need to be allowed time to, respond to a cop's order to open the door and they need to be allowed time to comply with the law. But the moment you start just sending them in there, just kicking in the door in the middle of the night, then people get killed, including the cops. It's not safe for anybody. It's common sense, to say nothing of common decency,
right?
To observe that, fundamental of common law, and they're not doing it now, and it's just idiocy here in police state America.
Well, and everywhere else that our military is in Afghanistan and in Iraq, our guys are. Our men and women are going house to house and instituting martial law, instituting a police state, in some cases apparently using RFID technology to secure villages and in other cases rounding up whole villages and taking them to places like Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib. And, these people are, if they're surviving the war zone and the depleted uranium are coming back here, and often if they've still got any mental faculties at all, that doesn't mean they're not psychotic sometimes, but are being assimilated back into the police community, and you end up with these really
we think it's bad now. Just wait till some of these guys with shell shock. Come back from Iraq and get jobs as cops here.
And you hear so many stories about how the VA isn't there for them. I really, it's I don't think we really realize yet that this is much worse, I think. I don't have numbers, but this is much worse than Vietnam.
The degree of post-traumatic stress syndrome is the term we use now, that is being suffered by the troops over there in Iraq. We hear stories, but what we're hearing is only the tip of the iceberg. It's really bad, and coming right back into society, and a lot of these people, were marginal to begin with, and now, I just read the other day that they are lowering the standards even more for enlistment. So they're going to take in people who've been convicted of various crimes, and start sending them over there to the Iraq, and, well, who knows where else, ultimately, Iran. Have we got a situation there that's a powder keg that's going to blow up right back here at home?
Well, Mac, I think we should take a little musical break here and come back in just a few minutes, and we can wrap up the rest of this hour on the other side, if that's all right with you.
It sounds good.
I'm Dennis Stacy, publisher of Anomalous Books, anomalousbooks.com, and you're listening to Anomaly Radio.
Save your prayers. God is not here with us now. There is only the darkness here.
All right, we're back.
Yeah.
This is Smiles Lewis and Mac White. Mac, are you with us?
I am right here.
All right. You're listening to AnomalyRadio.com, and this is a brand new live show with your guests, me and Mac White. We'll be announcing the name of the show in the very near future, and we might hint at what we're going to call it at the end of the show. But right now we want to get back with talking to Mac White about what's been catching his eye and what's been catching my eye in the parapolitical and paranormal scenes and all points in between. I think Mac and I both pretty much use Alex Jones's network of websites, from Infowars.com to PrisonPlanet.com, as some of our main gateways to parapolitical information and conspiracy research. Anybody can level complaints or criticisms at folks like Alex Jones, but he certainly has done his share of bringing this subject area to the fore, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and just looking at the headlines that are at the top of the page on InfoWars tonight, huge fear-mongering billboards urge preparedness for a terror attack on 11-9-09, September 11th. 2009. These billboards are appearing all over America, and they're being used to advertise the Red Cross.
Huh.
And looking at the photograph here of this billboard, you can see it. Just go to Infowars.com, and you can click on the link there and see it for yourself, but I'm going to describe it. It is a headline ripped from the front page of a newspaper, November 9th, 2009, that says, "Terrorist strike leaves city in chaos." And there's a web address at the bottom of the billboard, preparewny.org, with the Red Cross symbol. And, makes the point here in the article that the fine print which of this graphic that's on the billboard indicates that it's a biochemical attack. So glad to see that the Red Cross is doing its part to spread fear throughout the nation.
Now, fear is the main tool of psyops and psychological operations, warfare, psychological warfare, info war. Why? I mean, I guess it's in the Red Cross's best interest to promote fear, to get people afraid so they can validate their existence. Same kind of with FEMA.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh.
Well, you know, and the date is so specific.
Well, and why? I mean, 2009. Okay, that's a safe distance ahead in the future. It could just as easily be 2007.
What's that?
It could just as easily be 2007. You know,
yeah.
Why?
Yeah. You know, what's interesting here are the numbers. When you look, 11/9/09. That's why I misread that earlier as September 11th, because it's 11 and 9.
Right.
Transposed. Okay.
November.
So it's November 9th. But you see, they're oh wow. I think this is very possibly some very sophisticated psyops going on here. Exactly how it's supposed to work, I don't know.
Well, hinting at what we'll probably call this new radio show, one of the things that's interested me for a long time is the convergence of fiction and nonfiction.
Yeah.
And how... fiction writers have definitely been employed by psyops, psychological warfare teams. I mean, they're writing fiction usually, though. They're weaving in little bits of tidbits of truth. Going back a couple of weeks, there was an interesting situation with a cartoon character in the form of little light bright type creations,
yeah.
Being seen all around the country, including here in Austin, Texas.
Yeah,
that scared the bejesus out of first responders in Boston, right?
In Boston, but it appeared in Austin and Seattle and so many other cities, and I think maybe the one case where it was reported to the police. That might have been Seattle. The local reaction was, this isn't anything. And they just shrugged it off. But for some reason in Boston, it just scared the bejesus out of everybody.
And I'm not trying to pick on Boston, but I mean, it may be an interesting psychological study in and of itself as to why that response happened there and nowhere else. But what
you
I'm
do
getting,
have to wonder if it might have been contrived for some reason.
Well, but getting at what I'm hinting at here, you know, viral marketing, stealth marketing, alternative reality gaming. These are arenas that have been used in recent years by PR firms and marketing and advertising firms to sell certain products and services. And in the case of this terror scare, it was Adult Swim cartoon show on the Cartoon Network that had some advertising firm guys build these little light brights of one of their characters, I believe shooting the finger, and putting them up in places where people would see them in hip locations around the country, like Austin, Seattle, and the Boston and New York City. And here, the fiction world of cartoons and television marketing intersects with the everyday existence of first responders, people who are trying their best to protect us. And, the average citizen who, might stumble upon these things and may freak out. You know, I've said this before, shows like Candid Camera always seemed really spooky to me in that the idea of staging certain things, especially violent or strange or unfamiliar things that cause people to have unknown reactions, that's pretty dangerous combustions type situation. I just recently stumbled across on YouTube, and you can go to anomalytv.com where I posted this, the famous hoax program called Alternative 3 that was perpetrated by one of Anglican television in the UK some years back in the 70s. And this was a program called Science Report that every week had a mainstream science news show. And then one day they aired, not on April Fool's Day, though if you look closely in the credits, it's dated as is, as if it aired on April 1st. It aired later on and was basically just like all their other shows, only not in that it was a totally conspiratorial episode wherein they seemingly uncover this conspiracy of scientists, mostly from Britain. They call it the British brain drain, where scientists from all fields are mysteriously mysteriously vanishing. And it ultimately leads to an off-world conspiracy that basically climate change is so bad that the superpowers of the planet have conspired to ferry away their best and brightest to bases they've built on the moon and Mars. And that they're terraforming Mars, and that they've actually discovered life on Mars. Now, this is fascinating to me for a number of reasons: my interest in UFOs, my interest in science in general, and this arena of the intersection of fiction and nonfiction, and disinformation, and psychological warfare. You know, there are those who've maintained that this is real, that this show was absolutely hinting at, if not absolutely accurate, accounting of what's really going on, as at least hinting at some of it. And there's been other examples of this. The most recent example, Mac, have you heard about this? The industrial band Nine Inch Nails?
No.
Nine Inch Nails has their singer named Trent Reznor. Really interesting backstory on this musician's approach to album making, but suffice to say, it's mostly really dark, electronic, and grungy. And he's had some pop hits. He's done some music even with David Bowie, and he's pretty well respected. Well, on he's associated now with a stealth marketing campaign that's part of its own conspiracy. And one of the headlines you can find is Nine Inch Nails Sparks Web Marketing Conspiracy from this is ADOTAS.com, Adatus.com. And apparently, last year, Trent Reznor launched the promotional tour for this new album of his, and I think it was in Peru, and somebody noticed that on the back of the tour shirts, the promotional shirts, where the tour dates, certain letters and numbers were highlighted that spelled out a message which, when Googled, found this whole series of conspiracy websites seemingly set in the future that talked about a drug called Parapen that was being surreptitiously introduced into the American water and food supply to prepare for a biological attack. And so there's all these fake websites out there that have been created to promote this new album, but it's all done mysteriously. And I've even seen in some of the parapolitical conspiracy websites carrying articles about this, or at least information from these fake websites, as if it's real.
Well, that's interesting. You know, you don't know whether it's just something that's being done for the hell of it, or if it's someone who is trying to put the idea out there in a fictional form so that it can be understood and acted upon, that this is someone trying to do good, or if it's serving some more sinister purpose. Questions like that were raised about the Lone Gunman episode, where this aired a year or two before the September 11th attacks, where there were these planes that were hijacked by a computer remote control to crashed into the World Trade Center in order to justify fascist dictatorship in America and a war in the Middle East. And, well, was this involved in the production of that series, trying to warn us, trying to, you know, giving us some kind of some useful information, or was this in some way meant to desensitize? I don't know. But the question of psyops is definitely raised by this sort of thing.
Well, this is what I think this is the direction I think that this show will likely go in. I mean, I know, again, as I said earlier, you and I have interests in all things paranormal and parapolitical, from consciousness and dreams and psychedelics and just mysteries in general. But there is, and I've dealt with this on other shows, but I mean, it deserves its own attention. I mean, this intersection is really significant. Did you know that the author of the Bond, the original James Bond series, named James Bond after a famous birder?
Yeah.
Wrote books on birding.
Uh-huh.
And in at least one of the film, one of the Bond films, apparently a spy uses birding as his cover.
Mm-hmm.
And according to cryptozoologists, Fortean, and parapolitical folks like Lauren Coleman, who's an expert in many areas but particularly known for his work in cryptozoology, the study of undiscovered animals like North American primates like Bigfoot, he maintains that Texas oil man Tom Slick, who founded several of the big research institutes here in Texas, including a primate research lab, among others, that when he visited Tibet looking for the Yeti and with Jimmy Stewart in tow, that he was actually not just exploring his actual alleged interest in cryptozoological pursuits, but that he was spying on the communists. And then, you know, you're familiar with the whole Operation Blue Beam.
Yes.
What was that about?
Operation Blue Beam. Well,
yes.
It was this experiment by the Pentagon's research arm to broadcast or rather project holograms in the sky that would simulate the Second Coming. And that sounds fantastic, but there is some evidence that these kinds of research programs were going on. And also, long before that research project was begun by the Pentagon, back in the early 60s when they were trying to come up with some sort of plan to invade Cuba, take it back from Castro, and so forth. One of the plans, and this is a documented fact, one of the plans that they came up with was to station ships around Cuba who would fire rockets or something in the air over the Cuban skies in order to simulate the Second Coming of Jesus, and to make it seem to the Cuban people that Jesus had come back and he wanted them to overthrow Castro. Now, this is a fact. This is one of the many plans that they had. That the history of PSYOPs, of the things that are proven and known that have occurred in the past, in World War II and so forth, you know, is just huge. And so we have to wonder what's going on now, what, you know, with the technology at the disposal of the elites and the military, what kind of operations are not just in the experimental stage, but being used right now. And to what degree are our perceptions of the world and so forth being influenced and manipulated by psychological operations?
Absolutely. Well, this is definitely the direction we're going to go, and there's so much to talk about here. I'm flashing back to your article for Austin Paratimes that I edited, that you wrote for, that we actually collaborated a little on, and you wrote the article, did a superb job on one of your most searched after articles on the internet, television and the hive mind. And this goes to the origins of radio, or if not the origins, some of the classic early experiences on the, with the masses being influenced by radio in the form of the War of the Worlds hoax.
Yes, yes.
We're in the last 2 minutes here, so we don't really have time to go into that, Mac, but I guess everybody, if they're interested in finding out more about Mack White, you can go to mackwhite.com, and you can, of course, listen to this show and past shows at anomalyradio.com, and I'm pretty sure the show is going to be called PsyOp Radio, so there you have it, folks. we hope you enjoyed tonight, and we'll keep watching anomalyradio.com for updates on this new show and, of course, Mac's existing live talk radio show here on Anomaly Radio and his podcast, which you can find at macwhite.podomatic.com, or just go to macwhite.com and you can find links to it there. Mac, any final words?
Well, yeah, we're running out of time, but it's been a good show, I think. We've just touched on some great topics, and there's so much more to talk about, and I just hope we'll be doing these on a regular basis. PsyOp Radio.
PsyOp
yes, like
Radio.
Spelled PSIOP.
Yes. All right, folks. Well, thanks for tuning in, and we're going to cut to some music here, so thanks for tuning in. This is PsyOp Radio on AnomalyRadio.com with Mack White and Smiles Lewis. Peace out.
Good night.